Hello, committee. Today is Wednesday. It's been a very long Wednesday, but we're still here, and we still have good work to do today. Our first order of business is approval. Yep, I call this meeting to order of the House Education Policy Committee. Our first order of business is approving the minutes from Tuesday, March 7th. And we'll see, Representative Lee, I guess you had been asked earlier to take a look at those, and does it look okay? And can you give us a motion for approving the minutes?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have reviewed the minutes from March 1st, and I move to approve them.
Or March 7th? March 7th?
Or, correct.
Tuesday,
yes,
March 7th.
From March 7th.
Yeah. That's usually a mistake I make, so I appreciate if someone else does those.
So things. We're on the same page. No, I was reading that Rep. Feist moved the minutes from March 1st. Excuse me. So
that's right.
Yes. I move the March 7 minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion of the minutes? All right. Hearing none. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. All right. We are on now to public testimony for the DE amendment to House File 1269. You know, we had testifiers that signed up ahead of time, so we have a good agenda, but I think we should be able to make it through in the time we have allotted and also have time for member questions. But we will save the questions to the end, because I know that testifiers, you know, may not necessarily be able to proceed. Yes, Representative Birdall, you have a question ahead of time. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering, is there a time limit on the testifiers?
Yes, that's part of my opening spiel. I appreciate calling a special attention to it. We do want to move through and make sure that we have time for all testifiers. So if you can limit yourself to the 2 minutes testimony, and we again have our committee legislative assistant will help you keep track of the time. We have three different colored slips up here. The first one is green, which means that you're at the 1 minute point. This one is 1 minute. This one is the 30 seconds. You've got 30 seconds. And then when you see this neon kind of colored, that means time. And we hope that you can get to your closing thoughts, and then we'll move on. So.
And beyond that, if Elizabeth jumps up and down.
Yeah.
Isabel.
Isabel, yes. And, well, you'll actually hear me asking you if you can come to your closing thought. I hope to, we'll try to keep things on time. We'll give you a moment to finish your statement, but we will make sure that we've got time for everybody to give their testimony today, that it's signed up, and also that we'll have time for the committee to actually do its work and ask questions. All right. So that's some of our introduction here, and I think that we can actually get started then. Our first testifier is Commissioner Jett, Commissioner of Department of Education. Welcome, Commissioner Jett. And since this is the Department of Education, and much of this is related to the governor's policy bill that we presented earlier in the session, Commissioner Jett will have a longer presentation this morning to really inform the committee of some of the thinking and the highlights of what we have presented in this policy bill. So please proceed, identify yourself, and proceed, Commissioner Jett.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for allowing me to have more than 2 minutes as I was looking at this. All right. So my name is Willie Jett, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Commissioner of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to share my support for your education policy omnibus bill. I first want to thank you for including so many provisions from the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's policy bill, which is predicated on our Due North Education Plan and seeks to work toward the goal that every child receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or their zip code. We've been working on these proposals for many years, and I'm happy to see all of them in this bill. The proposals in this bill focus on centering the whole child in all that we do and builds Minnesota's world-class education through safe and welcoming environments with caring and qualified teachers so that students, as unique individuals, are seen, valued, and heard as they come into our school buildings every day. I want to highlight the importance of a few of the packages in my comments today. First, creating a safe and welcoming environment requires providing programs and supports where students see themselves in their education and feel protected. Thank you for embedding ethnic studies and indigenous education for all in our academic standards while still allowing students flexibility in their schedules to pursue their academic interests. We have filled staff supports funded during the 2021 legislative session, and this will embed the fabric of our increasingly diverse state across all of our academic standards. I also appreciate the inclusion of all the past due proposals for American Indian education, from honoring a student's right to wear items of cultural significance at graduation ceremonies, banning mascots depicting American Indians, and creating Indigenous Peoples Day, to empowering American Indian parent advisory committees. Also for allowing data sharing with tribal nations. All of these take the necessary steps towards supporting some of our most underserved students. We know that students need to be in classrooms to succeed academically. Every minute that a student misses instruction has a detrimental impact on their learning and subsequent achievement. This is why proposing next-generation alternatives to exclusion is critical to the academic, mental, behavioral, and social-emotional trajectories of our young learners. The implementation of system-wide non-exclusionary discipline practices, a package the department has proposed for several years, is paramount to keeping students in the school setting and committing to their success and closing the achievement gap. This policy language works in tandem with investments proposed by the governor and lieutenant governor to support professional development in the non-exclusionary discipline practices, alternatives to suspensions, and model discipline policies. Next, caring and qualified teachers is another prong in meeting the needs of our students. We know that supported teachers provide a stronger teaching and learning environment, and students need to see themselves and who is teaching them. And when students learn from diverse teachers, all students benefit. I am thankful that this bill builds upon the funding passed in prior sessions by establishing a goal for more diverse teaching workforce and embeds cultural competency and expectations for us educators across the range or this range of statutory programs. I'm thankful for the work of the Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers Coalition in this space. We're grateful for their partnership. We also appreciate supports like protecting educators who teach about federally protected class of people, getting rid of the basic skills test for teacher licensure, and allowing for flexibility in the composition of all teacher licensure programs. There are so many other provisions in this bill that allow for our students to have a world-class education and to succeed academically, like making sure that our students pursue post-secondary enrollment options with the support of public education funding. And with that, I'd also like to note the inclusion of several provisions that allow the department to do our work more effectively and efficiently and with the most accountability. So thank you for including several items in the standard space to assure that we can review and revise all academic standards on the 10-year cycle. And I appreciate the separate fast-tracking and inclusion here of the delay of the review and revision of physical education standards. I'd like to thank you, especially to Chair Pryor, here for providing relief for our physical education teachers. And lastly, this bill, it acknowledges and honors the diversity of our students, families, and staff, again, by keeping students in the classroom, by creating opportunities for all students, by diversifying the teaching profession, and promoting a range of worthy policies that seek to increase transparency and accountability. So again, it's clear that we share many shared goals, and I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to offer my support of this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, I have Matt Shaver. And Melinda Lowe is next on my list, and so if you can be ready to get up in a moment, please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the policy director at EdAllies. Thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts on the DE amendment to House File 1269. We want to thank Chair Pryor for authoring the bill. EdAllies strongly supports the inclusion of Representative Sensenmura's ethnic studies provisions in Article 2, Sections 10 through 13. Additionally, the inclusion of Representative Richardson's non-exclusionary discipline policies that will help keep our youngest learners in school in Article 2, Sections 22 through 37. We strongly support all of Article 3 on American Indian Education that Representative Keeler has led on, which will make schools a more affirming space for students. We also support Article 4, Section 26, which is the BA exemption for world languages and culture and performing arts and visual teachers, which creates a route to the classroom for teachers who have tremendous amount of to offer to students. I want to thank Representative Hill for your leadership on that one. We also support Article 4, Section 46, which is the short call subpilot to begin addressing the lack of eligible subs, impacting meaningful student learning opportunities, and exacerbating teacher burnout. We hope that with the passage of universal meals in this body, and as we await action from the other body that shall not be named, that the alternative meal prohibition in Section 7, Article 2, is quickly made obsolete. The Attorney General has weighed in clearly that alternative meals are inherently demeaning and have no place in Minnesota schools, but we appreciate the cover there in statute as well. Finally, I'm going to put on my Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition hat on quickly. We ask that we please consider amending this bill to include a ban on seclusions for students in kindergarten through third grade. The Department of Education supports this proposal. Seclusion doesn't work. It causes trauma to the child, and we need to stop using ineffective tools. A seclusion plan for our youngest learners would ensure that a young child is not locked in a room alone while screaming in terror to be let out. We should stop doing that to little kids in this state. We want to thank Representative Pryor for this very strong policy bill. Thank you to members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. Thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Next, Melinda Lowe.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melinda Lowe. I'm from Excelsior. I am just a mom of seven, no fancy credentials, but I'm here today because I'm opposed to the changes in language for PSEO admission using faith-based statements. I also started a Facebook group on Friday with members in opposition to this change as well, and in 5 days, less than 5 days, we have almost 500 members, so I don't speak alone here today. 25% of PSEO students currently attend PSEO at faith-based institutions. There's a long-standing precedent of PSEO students attending colleges that require a statement of faith. There is no good reason to change this now. It is obvious that this change will force these institutions to choose between their deeply held religious beliefs or stop offering PSEO in person. When government imposes on religion, as the state is attempting to do here, religion loses the independence guaranteed to it by the Constitution. Moreover, precedent is established in Supreme Court rulings, Carson versus Macon and Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue, that religious schools should be able to participate in publicly available programs without discrimination, and students should be able to participate in these programs on equal footing as students who attend non-religious schools. Making this change and forcing students away from faith-based colleges to secular universities will only increase the competition for already limited spots and decrease the choices available to all students. The University of Minnesota receives 1,600 PSEO applicants per year and only admits 45% of those students. My daughter is a sophomore in high school. She wants to be a nurse and will need to take lab science classes in person. She's been planning for years to go to Northwestern as they have a highly rated nursing program. If funding is pulled due to this amendment and PSEO is no longer an option for her at Northwestern, she'll be forced to apply to the U of M instead. Now, my daughter is a straight A student who is recognized for having one of the top scores in Minnesota on the ACT when she was just 12 years old. So I think it's reasonable to believe that she would be one that was admitted to the U of M if she applies. And if that happens, she'll be taking one of the limited spots available from someone who really did want to attend the U of M. These changes will limit PSEO options for Minnesota students. More choices allow for more options for more students. I'm happy to discuss this further with members of the committee. I have handouts if you need it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I have Emma Crooks.
Good afternoon. My name is Emma Crooks. I'm a senior in high school and a PSEO student at Northwestern, and I'm from Faribault, Minnesota. I'm here today because of the clear attack and setback on educational freedom. I've had the amazing opportunity of taking PSEO courses through the University of Northwestern, and because of that, I'm not far from my associate's degree. I'll be the first of my parents' five kids to leave the house for college this coming fall, but with the language in this proposed bill, I may be the only one of my parents' five kids to have ready access to important educational opportunities that can set them up to succeed and learn from schools that have the same values and beliefs as they do. When considering various PSEO programs, flexibility and having options is extremely important and valuable. The freedom to choose which institution fits a student best is something I hope we can all agree is important. My PSEO experience at the University of Northwestern as a homeschool student and a follower of the Christian faith has been irreplaceable and has really been a milestone of educational growth and leadership development for me. I desperately want the same for my siblings and other students with similar beliefs or educational backgrounds, because every student deserves the opportunity to challenge themselves and enroll in the PSEO program of their choice in order to get and stay ahead. But by removing any school with a statement of faith requirement from PSEO eligibility, you're removing the right of students of faith to be allowed in a safe and comfortable learning environment like any student in any protected class would get. There is no credible evidence to suggest that this change is necessary, useful, or beneficial at all. Instead, it clearly harms and cripples schools and families with a certain worldview, hindering the educational freedoms of students like me. I'm asking you to strike lines 19.8 through 19.11 in the original versions and to recognize that this is a significant step backwards for educational freedom. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mitchell Lauder.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mitchell Lauder. I'm a PSEO student at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and I'm from Arden Hills, Minnesota. First off, I'd like to say that the Minnesota PSEO program has been a tremendous blessing for myself as it has tested my faith and grown it, and I want that availability to be available to my siblings and other students in the state. However, that requires maintaining the faith statement, which maintains the culture on the University of Northwestern, where I attend, and also the other universities and colleges in the state of Minnesota. So I'm here today to encourage you all to strike lines 19.8 through 19.11 in HF 1269 and SF 1311. I see this as a secularist attempt to stop religion, and you might say that, oh, hey, we have a separation of church and state, which is not entirely true, because that comes from a letter from Thomas Jefferson, 1802, excuse me, not a actual legal document. After all mankind's conflict is religious, and in the state of Minnesota will be encouraging or discouraging religious activity. So, and at the end of the day, my message is this: you will be encouraging religious activity or not. So you'll be picking between religions that have stood the test of time or secularism, which leaves the question of meaning of human existence to ambiguity. So again, I encourage you to stop the march of secularism in Minnesota by striking lines 19.8 through 19.11 in the original versions of HF 1269 and SF 1311. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Miller.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Education Committee. Thank you for giving me this time to speak to you today. My name is Karen Miller. I'm a Weber mother, wife, and teacher from Dakota County. And I'm here today to raise concern about the ethnic studies component of HF 1269, because it will be taught through a lens of critical race theory. Even though I'm home educating my children, I chose to speak out because I care about the entire generation of children that they are growing up alongside. They are the future of America. To be clear, all students learning about cultures and ethnicities different from their own is a valuable lesson, and every student should be able to recognize their own ethnic heritage as a part of the diverse history of our country. Although we must think carefully about the lesson we are teaching students about what makes them who they are, do we truly believe that their internal beliefs, their character, and their future actions are predetermined by external factors like the level of melanin in their skin? Let us not teach our students that they are trapped by their skin color to be inherently an oppressor or forever the oppressed. Instead, let us teach them the truth that each one of us is descended from one human race, just with different levels of melanin. That despite our external differences and our past histories, we all have the same potential on the inside to either become a noble instrument of what is just and good, or become a cruel instrument of evil and vice. This is the heritage of every young American, that we can stand shoulder to shoulder, just like the white person who realized that slavery was wrong and the person of color who longed to be free. Together, we can overcome the injustice of racial bias to claim the birthright of every American, that all are created equal and given the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Teaching ethnic studies through a lens of critical race theory will only deepen the divisions between us and enslave us all. Let us therefore choose to link arms and continue to break free. Therefore, I ask you to consider removing or revising the ethnic studies portion of this bill to eliminate the divisive critical race terminology. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Carrie Phelps.
Hello. I'm Carrie Phelps. I'm a parent and I'm a citizen of Representative Boehner's district concerned about the rising cost of college and the mountains of student loan debt many students acquire to obtain a college degree. I'm not a professional lobbyist, nor am I affiliated with any institution or organization. In my free time, I do moderate Minnesota's Homeschooling for College Credit online group, which is simply an indicator to you that I do invest my personal time into helping students get college degrees without incredible debt. As such, I am very concerned about the inclusion of lines 19.8 through 19.11 in this bill, which I believe would negatively impact PSEO opportunities in the state. As I considered the proposed language and organized my thoughts, I was reminded of Thomas Jefferson's famous phrase, as previously stated, made in 1802, about the wall of separation between church and state. And so I'd like to frame my comments within this sentiment. I am proud of the state of Minnesota for the respectful way that the state and sectarian institutions have worked together to provide educational opportunities to students of this great state, consistent with Section 16 of our Constitution that protects freedom of conscience. Public funding can be directed to sectarian institutions that require a statement of faith for non-sectarian programs and materials. We certainly see this with PSEO, but also in private sectarian K-12 schools that require a signed statement of faith but are eligible for textbook reimbursements. Well done, Minnesota. But directing of public funds is not the only way that separation of church and state should be considered. Implied in that statement is the idea that there is a church and certainly that there is a state. The particular language proposed in this bill would require sectarian institutions to forego having PSEO-seeking students sign an affirmation of faith. It may seem like this is simply an administrative loophole to admission, but it is not. As a religious person myself, I am here to affirm that these public declarations of faith are actually a central tenet of the faith. It is important that each member of the sectarian community make a public declaration and a public commitment to their community. Churches have membership programs. These statements of faith are the equivalent institutionally. This is an important understanding because these declarations of faith are so important that I don't expect institutions to drop them. Instead, they will simply drop out of the PSEO program. And that's the heart of my concern. The statutory purpose of PSEO is to provide a wider variety of options to students. When these institutions drop out of the PSEO program, we will be limiting options available to all students across the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have a remote testifier, and so that might take a moment to make sure that we're up and running. Beatrice Hanlon, if you could hear me right now, please unmute yourself, identify yourself, and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I am here. Hello, I am Beatrice Hanlon. I am from White Bear Lake, Minnesota. I am a former PSEO student and a current undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota, and I am here in support of the removal of lack of faith statements within the PSEO program. Because these statements are inherently bigoted and they target minority students in this state. Currently, when I was a PSEO student, I applied to the University of Northwestern as it was close to my home and also had good education programs. However, once I had been accepted, I was prompted to sign a faith statement and morality clause that stated I could not identify with same-sex attraction or identify as any other gender beyond that of my assigned sex at birth. If I were allowed to attend that college, I would have been kicked out if they ever found out that I was gay or trans at any point of my attending that school. I identify as a lesbian. So in that moment, I had to decide either to get an education or hide who I was from school administrators. I ended up being accepted to other programs which did not require faith statements and did not discriminate against students because of their identity. And I decided to attend there instead. Students should But not every student will get this choice. And students shouldn't have to choose between education and being accepted for who they are. There is nowhere in the Bible that says that students cannot be, that homosexuality is against the religion or trans or being trans. So therefore, these schools should not be making students sign faith statements that are homophobic and transphobic. And these students are already at risk. These are already students who are at risk and vulnerable populations within the state. And by threatening their education opportunities and portraying them as dangerous and immoral within these faith statements, this rhetoric does not fit within the education standards of the state, nor the PSEO program as it was designed. And that is why I support the clause that will ban institutions from asking PSEO students for faith statements and allowing institutions to discriminate against students on the basis of their identity. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Roger Arneson, who is also remote. If you can unmute, identify yourself, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Arneson. I represent the Elementary Principals Association and the Secondary Principals Association, and I appreciate the opportunity to come in here and testify today on the policy bill. And as you note in your packets, the two associations have submitted letters regarding the disciplinary provisions that we have some concerns about. The two associations represent 2,000 school principals and assistant principals in public schools throughout Minnesota. And of course, the committee has heard multiple descriptions of the intent of this legislation regarding discipline. And you all know that in the end, it's the language in the bill that controls. We would urge you to look closely at that language. We actually hope that this is the beginning of the discussion on this language rather than the end of it. And we hope that in the end, we're going to have a bill that we can all support. In making your decisions, there's two issues we believe that you have to think about addressing the disciplinary issues. And, of course, the first is what we call the racial disparities in suspensions. And then second is the use of suspension overall for student behavior. And that use of suspension for student behavior, we're talking about for the safety and security of what's happening in our schools and for the social and emotional development of our students. The current language, in our opinion, poses significant challenges for schools and student behavior. At the outset, we'd want you to look at, relative to the elementary school suspension provisions, is it good policy to divest elementary principals of the authority to suspend a student who poses a safety threat to themselves or others? The Elementary Principals Association believes that actually the language of restricting suspensions generally is a good idea, but we do think principals should continue to have the authority to suspend a child who may pose a safety threat to themselves, staff, or others. The recess standard, as you'll note from the letter, we actually talked very positively with the decisions on changing restrictions of recess, but the standard that's used here is actually we can only use the restriction when the student is likely to cause serious harm, which we think is much too high of a standard, and that standard ought to say safety threat. The third part here that we'd want you to look very, very closely at is, and this is embedded in the language, but school principals would be divested of the authority to suspend a student who engages in what we would describe as racial harassment, bullying, sexual harassment, class disruption, possession of drugs, theft. And we do like to use, and school principals do use, non-exclusionary discipline in the current practice. But at the end of the day, it is a last resort sometimes to suspend students. This bill would basically say that we can no longer do that. That poses a significant problem for school principals throughout Minnesota.
And
we believe
Arneson,
it's essential that resources be...
I have a feeling that you're wrapping it up, but I did let you go past your time. I'm sorry, but I know you needed to say this.
Past my time. I appreciate the committee's attention, and let's just leave it at, we'll continue to work with you on these issues.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Next up, we have Claire Luger.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Pryor and committee members. My name is Claire Luger. I'm a special education teacher in White Bear Lake area schools. I'm also a parent of three kids. In this bill, I appreciate so many great changes, like Tier 1 teachers joining collective bargaining units, defining ethnic studies and institutional racism, cultural competency expectations, improving American Indian education, and requiring market and demand studies language to charter school requirements. I also appreciate the elimination of harmful and discriminatory faith-based statements as a requirement for any PSEO student at a higher education receiving secular taxpayer dollars. I appreciate not having to have signed one of these statements in order to attend Bethel University. I applaud the components of this bill, but I'm going to use my educator hat here for just a minute to be a warm demander. The bill is a great start, but we need more for our special education educators. The paperwork that goes into huge caseloads requires hours of detail-oriented work and frequently leaves us with the option of either working outside of our contract hours or prioritizing it over teaching. We still need caseload limits and dedicated prep time for due process work in our day. Minnesota has a higher level of paperwork than at a federal level, and some school districts require even more than the state's requirements. SPED teachers don't just do paperwork, though. We test, lesson plan, teach the same number of classes as our colleagues, and plan and attend IEP meetings for our caseload students and any student we provide services to. The due process dates aren't negotiable for very good reasons, but the impact of that is that something else ends up being less of a priority. Paperwork is the foundation of establishing what our most vulnerable students need and are entitled to in our schools, and we have to ensure that it's done well. However, I don't want to choose between quality paperwork and creating meaningful work and relationships with my students. It is especially important for teachers to develop relationships with our at-risk learners. The way to address this, as well as special education teacher burnout, is to require local districts to implement caseload limits and dedicated due process work time during the day so that we can spend more quality time with our students. Again, I thank you for your work on this bill.
Thank you. John Olson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Olson. I'm a member of the board of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association. And about a year ago, I retired from the Minnesota Department of Education, where I was a science specialist and worked on science standards. I'm here to address the graduation requirements in science, beginning with line 922. The current graduation requirements have three parts: credits, courses, and standards. Three credits of science included one credit of biology, one credit of chemistry or physics, and one nebulous elective credit. Within these courses, students must satisfy all the standards in earth and space science, life science, and either chemistry or physics. When this bill, House File 1269, was introduced, the specific courses were eliminated, leaving only the requirement for three credits and the achievement of science standards. The current bill before you reverts the graduation requirement to what was previously. This is an improvement over the introduced bill. However, there is still an issue in the reference to the elective credit. The Minnesota Science Teachers Association advocates for the replacement of the elective credit with a requirement of one credit of earth and space science. Understanding the areas of geology, meteorology, and astronomy is critical for our citizens and our economy, which is highly dependent on the use of natural resources, wise management of water, and advances in modern technology. The science standards were written with the expectation that students would study earth science concepts in sixth grade and again in high school. Without a specific course requirement to guide districts, many students would miss the opportunity to learn these valuable concepts. Due to the content demands of the science disciplines, science has separate teaching licenses in life science, chemistry, physics, and earth science. These licenses are tied to specific courses, and without this correlation, there is a likelihood of having inadequately prepared teachers teaching the earth and space science concepts. I encourage you to include the earth science as a course that's required for graduation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Caitlin Snyder.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Caitlin Snyder, and I am representing Education Minnesota today. First, I would like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for advancing a number of priorities that are going to help support our kids in our classrooms. language from the Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers Act that support culturally responsive schools, the American Indian Education Act and the Indigenous Education for All, the inclusion of ethnic studies, making sure that all of our students can access PSEO programs across the state. These are going to make a difference in our students' lives. One piece in particular about that is culturally responsive training added to the principal development and evaluation. We really appreciate this. We know this is part of the reason why our members in the first few years of teaching can struggle in environments if they don't feel supported as well by their administrators. As a union representing educators, I'd also like to thank the committee for their work to improve the working conditions in schools. There are numerous provisions throughout this bill that will have a real impact on people's lives. We appreciate the inclusion of language from the Education Support Professionals Bill of Rights to make sure that workers are paid on e-learning days and provided an opportunity to work. This is not a cash cow for schools. This is an opportunity for everyone to be participating in the full school experience, allowing Tier 1 teachers to join the bargaining unit, allowing our early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers to have the same due process rights as all other licensed teachers. Curricular policy language that will protect members. We've seen in other states some concerning trends, and so this will help make sure that we don't see the same movement limiting free speech here in Minnesota. Lastly, thank you for the inclusion of items from the Removing Barriers Bill that will give greater access to world language and arts teachers without a bachelor's degree throughout the tiers, and removing the basic skills test for teachers. This will move, I believe it's 800 some teachers immediately from tier 2 to tier 3. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Shep Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Shep Harris with Fredrickson and Byron. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools, which is a coalition of 17 diverse independent schools spread across the state from Duluth all the way down to Faribault and in between. One of their main common themes is to maintain independence and partnerships at the local level. There's a couple of items that we just wanted to highlight in the bill today. First is a thank you. In Article 1, there is a section which allows for transportation agreements between the school districts and with non-public schools. And this flexibility helped support students and families during COVID, and clearly we've seen that its worthiness has been proven, so we appreciate the inclusion of that language so it can be continued. Generally, MACE likes just based, there is a statutory precedence for provisions that are more permissive and encouraging, and so for their items in this bill that are mandatory, we would prefer that they are more permissive and encouraging for independent schools. So specifically in Article 2 regarding reporting records, the proposal on the table if approved would further mandate independent schools to include recommended services of pupil needs to prevent inappropriate behavior from occurring. In this case, one size does not fit all. Some of the MACE schools record disciplinary actions on a student's transcript and some do not. Some require students to report disciplinary actions on college applications, some do not. So in this case, the independent schools would like to retain that level of independence and the mission-aligned judgment in making the determination about that disclosure. And secondly, while we understand the logic behind the proposal, there's some concerns around unintended consequences. The schools do not feel comfortable necessarily speculating about what those preventative services should be, and furthermore, it might open them up to possible liability. So for that reason, Madam Chair and members, MACE asks for your thoughtfulness and your consideration regarding those proposals that I highlighted. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And finally, of public testifiers that notified us of their intent to testify, I have Cindy Milda.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Ha Metakiapi, Shantewashte Iyuha Nape Chiyuzapi Ye, Ma Dakota Ye, Shakpe, Mede Wakantuan Oyate Hematahan, Amos and Rose Crooks, Tioshwe Hematahan, Dakota Iya, Pijiti Yuha Maniwi De Mie, Washichu Ia, Cindy Milda, Imakiapi Ye. In Dakota, I said, hello my, relatives. I greet you with a good heart and a warm handshake. I am Dakota, and my homelands are from the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community, and I come from the Amos and Rose Crooks family. My Dakota name is Waxwith Medicine Woman, and my English name is Cindy Milda, and I am the Public Education Program Coordinator for the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community, or SMSC. I thank you again, as this is my third time seeing all of you, and it's good to see you again today. I'm here today to testify in favor of House File 1269. My role with SMSC is to share our community stories with groups from school and church groups to senior citizen and youth clubs. When I turned 18 years old, just 38 years ago, I was denied the right to vote in my home city, county, and state. SMSC members were subject to land status in a city that considered us illegal aliens. It took Minnesota Supreme Court action in 1985 to restore our vote. Another story I would like to share with you today is when my children were in school, I would keep them out of school for Indigenous Peoples Day. It was a special day to celebrate our Dakota culture and who we are as Indigenous people. It wasn't to have them skip school. It was to educate them who we are and where our ancestors came from. My grandmother was denied this right as she was a boarding school survivor from the Pipestone Indian School in Minnesota. She didn't want her children and grandchildren to go through the same treatment she received when she went to school. Her hands were slapped for speaking her first language. My grandmother did not teach us the language or most of our culture out of fear of institutional racism. At 56 years old, I am learning my Dakota language along with my children and grandchildren. Sacred tobacco is what we know, what we call as chinchasha in Dakota, red willow, or more commonly known as dogwood. I carry a little pouch with me most days. Chinchasha is one of our four sacred medicines that we as Indigenous people use. There are teachings with every medicine. We don't carry them just to carry them. We carry them for a purpose. Prohibiting a public school district or charter from adopting a name, school, or image of American Indian tribe, custom, or tradition as a mascot, nickname, logo, letterhead, or team name for the district or school without a tribe's consent is inexcusable in this day and age. I'm currently serving on the MIEA, Minnesota Indian Education Association Board. I think it's very important for the commissioner to listen to what TNAC, the Tribal Nations Education Committee, has to say about our children. They know and work with our children on a daily basis. I know there's many things that I have to say and many things in this bill and not enough time, so I would love to talk to each and every one of you. And thank you, Pidama Yaye, thank you for your time on this today. Thank you.
Thank you. I did not count your introducing yourself to the committee as part of your 2 minutes, and so that's why it maybe seemed a little bit longer, because we require people to introduce themselves. We do not count that against your time. So thank you very much for being with us today. Thank you. All right. That is our member testifiers today, public testifiers. Commissioner Jett was not able to stay through the whole meeting right now, but we do still have staff from MDE. Mr. Uni is here. If we have any particular questions from that we'd like to have MDE address, he is available. And any follow-up from the testimony that we've heard today? And that's fine. All right.
Okay. I do have some.
Representative Bigberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're not a very talkative group today. I was waiting to hold my tongue. So you guys may be shocked at that. But thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think it's probably a surprise. I have concerns about this mandate-rich bill that's been drafted. In large part by people furthest from the classroom. I just want to address two things. I know we're going to talk about it on Friday in particular. And the two areas I want to talk about, the first one is the K-3 suspensions. Roger Arneson, the lobbyist for Minnesota Elementary Principals Association, Secondary Principals Association, testified and did a great job. I was also able to be part of a call in my principal role where there was a call facilitated by the Department of Education. And frankly, the MDE staff, the purpose as we got into that was more to try to get principals on board with this approach and this policy than to actually hear from administrators. So there were Jamboards collected. I have not seen any of those, so if MDE can provide those, that would be great. But one of the common themes on this call was school principals pushing back against this mandate and asking the department to rethink this policy and support the schools that are actually struggling, because as Mr. Arneson said, there are significant disparities in suspensions. That does need to be addressed. And how the use of suspension is used, that needs to be addressed as well. But for those of us on the committee, anytime a student is suspended, there's an incident report entered into a system called DIRS, Discipline Incident Reporting Suite, and then we're able to collect that data. That's what the Human Rights Coalition used as, or the Human Rights Department used that data for their findings. And I would just ask the department, instead of making a blanket statement, a blanket policy across the entire state of Minnesota, I would ask that you actually support the principals who need that support. That data is there. Use the data that we collect, or that we put in to DIRS every single year. But MDE's approach is similar to a building principal walking into a staff meeting and scolding everyone in the staff meeting because a handful of people are showing up late. That's just not good practice. These types of policies are the reason why, one of the reasons why, educators are leaving. So I would encourage MDE to think about that and actually listen to principals, and don't just put us through these show committee hearings to try to gather information. The second thing I want to address is the PSEO statement of faith piece. We heard testimony today from some very, very articulate young men and women from both sides of the perspective. We have testimony in our packet, and if any of you are like me, you've received hundreds of emails on this topic from people across the state with concerns. I still don't know, and we can have this discussion offline, what is the problem MDE is trying to solve with this? What's the issue? Is it that too many kids are going to faith-based institutions and we're losing money from other higher ed institutions? Well, I would challenge those institutions to improve and attract those kids to come to your institution. Yeah. Short of having an answer, I can only make assumptions. Are we concerned about faith-based institutions and the quality of their instruction, the compliance of their instruction? And let's just keep in mind that they're only doing non-sectarian classes. Kids are not getting religious instruction with this money. There are dollars going to private schools, as we heard in testimony. And if there are concerns, has MDE addressed those individual concerns, or are we just going to do another blanket policy because we don't like faith-based institutions? There's no requirement for a student to go to a faith-based institution. There's no requirement. There are lots of options, as we heard about. The University of Minnesota is a great option. But if we eliminate kids to freely exercise their faith by going to a faith-based institution, we are eliminating options. And in my opinion, this is a blatant example of bias against faith-based institutions and people of faith. Now, I have a lot of respect for Commissioner Jett. He's been a superintendent, he's been a principal, he's been a teacher, he's been a coach. He gets it. And I was going to ask him and encourage him today by something that a mentor gave me. And by no means am I implying that I'm mentoring Commissioner Jeff, just to be clear. But a principal said to me early in my administrative career, Ben, never sail out on the ship alone. Never sail out on the ship alone. And in my opinion, whoever at the department is coming up with these policies are sailing out on the ship alone. And I look forward to having more conversation on Friday to discuss this.
We're also doing member comments. Any member comments at this point? Chair Yu King.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for putting together such a comprehensive bill. I know this is a hard task. I had to do it once before, too, with education policy, and sometimes policy and funding are intertwined, and that can kind of be hard to pull apart. So there's still policy pieces that are going to be moving on and living on in education finance. I didn't have a chance to. I was out in the hallway speaking with some constituents, but I did happen to have a chance to hear Beatrice, the student from the U of M, talking about that faith-based statement. And there is another side to this, and there's exclusionary side to it as well when it comes to students that have this opportunity to go to a PSAO institution that we're spending money on and are being told if it was a Jewish student, if it was a Catholic student, if it was a Muslim student, that they would have to sign a faith-based statement saying that they're Christian to be able to go there when we're giving public dollars to PSAO. And as a principal, when I talk to my principals, their biggest concern is that we have to start thinking about those dollars going with those kids, too, because that's concerning. So those dollars go, that the base funding goes with that student to that PSEO institution. So when we're spending state money, we're wanting to make sure that we're meeting all kids' needs and being very inclusive. And that's what concerns me about the faith-based statement. As one of the testifiers said, Northwestern has an incredible nursing program. Mankato does too, but they usually don't have enough slots open either. So you are cutting off access by requiring a faith-based statement. But I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. And I know also the solution's not suspensions, folks. I wanted to just give a shout out. You've been working really hard on getting this language just right to make sure that it's workable. And I know that's still in the works as well. And just want to say thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. To no surprise, I really love Article 3. Thank you for that. I think it is absolutely important that every individual in Minnesota deeply understands Indigenous history, particularly what has happened on our land specifically. The only area that I just want to bring a suggestion back to that I made as we talked through it is 7.16 with the transfer pathway, just making sure that we establish that it can be a two-year college and tribal colleges. So saying that from this lens and public intent, that we make sure that we're building in our tribal colleges as options with this pathway as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. And again, thank you. We're so fortunate to have had the testimony that we've had in committee to really bring forward this, these articles. I mean, we put it into statute, but I think this is one of those opportunities where we've had to do some really, really good work in partnership with people that need to have voice and to need to be seen and need to be represented in our education bill. So we are very, very fortunate in the work that we've been able to do and that we can do going forward. Thank you for all the work. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I start my testimony, I just wanted to ask Asad Joshini coming up here and talk to Representative Frazier. Did you have something that you wanted to share with everyone? I just wanted to make sure there wasn't anything going on between the agency and Representative
Joshini. I can speak to it if you'd like.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for paying attention to that. I asked Mr. Yoni if we had any evidence of institutions rejecting folks that did not comply with the faith-based statement. His response was that he asked an institution if they used it as a qualitative, one of the qualitative tools to decide if folks would be admitted, and they said, yes, they do.
And Representative Mueller, further comments?
Thank you so much. And it's good to have all that information for all of us to hear. So that's really good for all of us to have. I guess as we look, I kind of want to piggyback just a little bit off of what Representative Bakeford said, in the sense that, you know, this is a pretty heavy mandate bill. I tried to go through and start counting the mandates as we were going in here, and just in Article 2 alone, there's at least 10 different mandates that are pretty heavy for our schools, and you know, we talk about how important it is for us to have local control. In our packets that was posted online and then in here, the letters are broken up by letters of support and letters of opposition. And in our letters of support is a letter from the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, Elementary School Principals Association, MREA, MSBA, and Schools for Equity in Education, SEE. And so what I found interesting that it was in the letters of support was that the concerns that they had actually outweighed the support that they had. They have quite a bit of concerns about new reporting requirements that I talked about in Article 2. They have quite a few concerns about the change to school discipline, about written policy on curriculum that should be made at the local level. They are very concerned about the elimination of pathways to Tier 2 and Tier 3 school licensing, concerned about some of the way that we define teachers' instructional days, and about making class size student testing and student to personnel ratio terms as a way for us to for the bargaining unit to start including that. And so I really wanted to make sure that as people are looking at their packets, that we understand that that really was a letter that did call attention to several of the pitfalls of this bill. I personally am thankful that we have the short call substitute language in there, something I've been working on for a while. I'm concerned about that it's not as flexible as I wanted it to be, but I know that it is an incredible need for our schools, and I really would challenge us that if that's something that is a priority for us, that we would pull that out and pass it very quickly so that we can have it so that we can actually have help for our students in our schools right now. But I would also, again, really caution us to look at the language, again, for licensing requirements and for removing pathways for the Tier 2 to Tier 3. As we look at how we have to independently look at our teachers and how they are qualified for the job, we have heard lots of testimony from teachers, current teachers, who are struggling with classroom management, struggling with reading, struggling with other things that are happening in the classroom, that is demonstrating to me that our teacher prep programs are not preparing our teachers appropriately, which means that we do need to have an independent mechanism for that. Talk to Dr. Bailey about having some sort of residency program, and how that, you know, if we're going to honor the performative profession that I have been very happy to call mine for the last 20 years, I think it's something that we need to honor in both our Tier 2 and our Tier 3 teachers. So, you know, it's, I know this is still the start of the conversation, and I'm happy that we are still continuing. And I really hope that as we have heard from hundreds of people on email, in other testimony from lots of people who are doing the job, learning from people who are actually doing the job, I would hope that we would take their comments to heart and that we would continue to revise a language that will actually help our students and our teachers and our parents as they are working really diligently to provide for their students. I would also finally say that, and maybe this is going to be, and Chair Joachim, maybe you can be able to answer this, but I'm really hoping to be able to see a good emphasis on literacy and hoping that that's included in EdFi, so that as that is such an important part and really a cornerstone of what we're going to do. So I got the thumbs up from Chair Yukin, so that's really exciting to see. So thank you, Madam Chair, for a moment to give my comments.
I will make the comment at this point that we are sending this bill to Ed Finance, that there's, as we've discussed before, there are so many financial aspects of things that we have brought forward as policy, and that the discussion continues forward. So, you know, but we're trying to limit it to the discussion of what is before us right now, which purposely we are not mentioning money. So, of course, it's not the finance bill. We can call them unfunded mandates, but that's just, it happens to be the form that it moves forward in this House. Be good, the things that are in this bill right now. Chair Yuakim.
Sorry. Chair Pryor, I just wanted to emphasize the literacy piece. Yes, it's something that you're all very well aware of that Representative Edelson's been working on for quite a long time and being comprehensive, and there is a loads of stuff in the governor's bill around literacy. I just wanted to touch base on the mandate piece, and I probably couldn't have said it better than you did, Chair Pryor. We're moving forward with this policy, and I think what we're hearing from our school districts, and I kind of, when we drill down on asking them, when they say no more mandates, and you ask, well, be specific, please. And where the real angst is lying is that they have been so dramatically underfunded for the last few decades that they do get concerned about being able to do even more with less. And I think that discussion will hopefully after this year start to take a turn, because we still have to think of some, what you would call mandates, I would call accountability, for the dollars we're giving our schools to close the opportunity gap and to do the good work that they're doing. So we are going to start changing our lexicon a little bit when we talk about this and asking for more specifics when we talk about mandates when we get to the finance bill. But I just want to throw that out there and just thank you for the bill again.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to call up someone from the Department of Education. I do think we should have further conversation in light of Representative Mueller's call.
Mr. Uni, if you'd please join us and identify yourself.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education.
Thank you. Representative Frazier.
Mr. Uni, can you use, we've heard some of the testimony that from some of the folks that are participating in PSEO programs and some of the faith-based institutions, and they've talked about the fear of being excluded. But then we heard direct testimony from someone that was actually excluded because of the faith-based statements. I'd just like for you to speak to kind of how you came to the decision around this policy and speak to also if you believe there's going to be any exclusion from the programs based on it.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Frazier, this matter came to us, it's been several years. This matter, I think, first came to my attention working with the team that oversees PSEO in our department back, I think, in 2017 or 2018. Where we heard from families and students that there were interest in attending PSEO programs offered at certain institutions and that they were not able to, or that they found that there was a requirement of a faith statement that they were unable to complete for various reasons that was required for entry into the program. We looked at administrative solutions for this. We did have conversations with some of the institutions and found ultimately that because there wasn't a specific statute in the books that stated that admissions policies had to be non-sectarian, that policy could be allowed. There's other reasons around that. Institutions and private sectarian institutions under case law is allowed to participate. I think that's from the early or mid-90s. So that's quite clear, and that was never a contention there in the administration action or a contention with this proposal here. No intention to prohibit participation in the PSEO program by any of these institutions. Additionally, there's a law in the book that says any courses that are provided by these institutions cannot be sectarian, and there's no assertion that that is not being followed as well. And I believe, you know, on some websites from these institutions, they are quite clear that none of the PSEO funding can be used for sectarian purposes, and there's no assertion there. So all of those come together to say if there wasn't a clear law in the book saying that admission policies could be sectarian, that an administrative action couldn't be taken to prohibit. So for the past several years, the administration has come forward with a proposal not allow statements based on someone's protected class, and in this case, we're using the specific words of faith statement required in the admissions process. To the second portion of the question, would this result in the exclusion of any individual student to participate in this program? No. The impact of this proposal would be to remove a barrier of participation by any student into a PSEO program.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I mean, when I hear you walk through how you got to this decision to put this policy in place, I mean, it sounds like to me, if we don't put this in place, what we could be furthering with taxpayer dollars, which I don't think most taxpayers would agree, is situations where schools could openly exclude folks for their protected class status.
Madam Chair, Representative Frazier. Yes, if a faith statement is required for entry into these programs, it would be on the basis of their religion.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Onu. Representative Knutson.
I have a question.
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
But there are other options, correct?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative, correct. There are other options for students to attend PSEO programs.
Thank you.
And Representative Bigford.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Uni, for coming up. So I just want to clarify, there's never been a concern about these faith-based institutions that you're aware of crossing that line of sectarian versus non-sectarian. And I'm using your testimony.
I think you said in courses is what I heard him say, Mr. Winnie.
Yeah, Madam Chair and committee members, to represent Knudsen's question as well, I'd like to add some clarification because that also adds to the history of how we got to this as well. So I appreciate you actually bringing that question up around the options. But to Representative Bakeberg's question, we have not had any issues raised, or I am not any aware of the team receiving any issues around any of the institutions that require faith-based statements for admissions having any issues with offering sectarian courses. That law is quite clear on the books, and we haven't had any issues there. So that's about course offering. This is about admission statements, where we do have an issue with, and can see, and I think the institutions would say, that there are faith statements required for admission into their PSEO programs. To the other options question, portion of the history as well some institutions will offer on-campus PSEO opportunities as well as online PSEO opportunities. What we've heard is that the faith-based statement requirement in the admissions process is required for the on-campus attendance, but not required for the online attendance. Our belief is that any opportunity in a state-based PSEO opportunity or state-based PSEO program should not have a barrier to entry, regardless of whether it's online or on campus.
Thank you. So I just want to clarify. So students across the state of Minnesota have multiple options for PSEO. So the issue that the department has, just so that I understand and can process it, is the issue of the on-campus admission statement of faith. Is that, to narrow it down, is that, that's the way I understand, I'll just end my comment. So what I understand is that the department's position is that they have issue with a student that is going to be on campus at a faith-based institution, they cannot require a statement of faith. I would assume that faith-based institution has a desire to maintain their environment. So I'll leave it at that, and I believe they should have that that freedom to do that. And we'll talk more about that.
So I think we were having a good discussion here, and I will go to Representative Frazier as we continue this discussion. But also, I think that some of this will probably be good offline too. But Representative Frazier.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't even know. Maybe this is a statement. Maybe I'll get to a question. But no, I think to what Representative Bakeberg was saying, I think, you know, when we're talking about options, I think the idea is that we're using taxpayer funded, we're using taxpayer resources to allow for students to have this opportunity. And it shouldn't be limited to a particular way to have the opportunity because the student doesn't want to comply with a faith statement from that institution. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. The student shouldn't have a narrow access to these opportunities because they can't comply with a faith statement from that institution that is accepting taxpayer dollars to provide this service. And I think when we talk about access and options, we want there to be more options. We want students, if this is the closest institution that they live to have that experience. My daughter spent a bulk of her 2 years, junior year and senior year, in PSEO. She loved it. She got to go on campus to do it. She was closer to more options, though. And if we had to avail her of a school that did a faith-based statement and she couldn't comply with that, she would not have had that opportunity. And we should not try to further or maintain that type of ability for institutions to exclude students, especially when we're funding with taxpayers' dollars. And that's my concern. That's why I like this language. But that is my concern, is that if we don't have this language, we will further that. And then at some point, we will be sued because of that. So that's my concern. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Representative
Erdl. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Uni, I'm going to switch topics a little bit on you here. Just going back to the exclusionary, non-exclusionary practices, you know, in the past I've had reports of children, students, you know, first, second, third grade that created situations that were very difficult in terms of discipline, but also with safety. And so my question is, what are the practices, recommendations that you would have for dealing with those types of students?
Mr. Uni.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Erdl, unfortunately, I'm having a hard time hearing with the acoustics in the room, so my apologies. I'll just repeat the question to make sure that I have it right. Is in a case where maybe there's younger students, K through three, where there's maybe an issue of a behavioral challenge that rises to possibly perceived safety issue, what are the de-escalation techniques that would be used to be able to handle the situation?
Representative Erdl.
Madam Chair, Mr. Uni, yes, that's what I'm trying to get at. Well, how is this type of situation rectified?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdl, so under our proposal in our non-exclusionary discipline proposal package, what we define as behavioral mental health services, de-escalation techniques that need to be implemented before either removal class or dismissal proceedings are presented. I think there's discussions to be had about at what point the non-exclusionary discipline proceedings need to happen, but certainly our position is before dismissal proceedings. There are opportunities for a student to be possibly, if allowed, taken to the back of a class or right outside into the hallway to engage in a de-escalation technique. I'm not a practitioner, so I can't lay out the specific steps of what a de-escalation technique would look like, but that would fall in within the definition we have of non-exclusionary discipline policies and procedures.
Representative Rola?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Uni, I'll just say that I think maybe this situation needs some more discussion and exploration.
I have no more member questions. We will be back on Friday, though, and we can have more member discussion at that point, too. All right. So we do have amendments that will be due tomorrow at noon, and we will be marking the bill up on Friday. And it's 8:30 in the morning on Friday. and it's in this room. All right. The meeting is adjourned.